News of the Times. Wicked Wednesdays. The Littlehampton Poison Pen Letter Mystery. Welcome to News of the Times. In today's episode, it sounds exactly like an Agatha Christie mystery. It is 1920, and residents of the town are being deluged with letters and postcards filled with shockingly vile language and libelous accusations. The central recipient of the tirade of hatred seems to be the unassuming Miss Edith Emily Swan, her family and her customers. The suspect is her neighbour, Mrs. Rose Gooding. Over a three-year period, residents of the small, quiet coastal town are bombarded with postcards and letters filled with hatred, accusations, and the vilest language possible at the time. This extraordinary case made the national papers and comes to the attention of Scotland Yard, who send in one of their best investigators. What unfolds is a sting operation to catch the perpetrator red-handed, involving round-the-clock surveillance and magic ink. A fascinating case of a town deluged with poison pen letters and the methods taken to catch the criminal is today's episode of Wicked Wednesdays. We hope you enjoy the show. Background. It is 1920 in Littlehampton in Sussex, a picturesque English town. But in a mystery of Agatha Christie proportions, the town is beset by a poisonous letter writer. The two main protagonists are Mrs. Rose Gooding and Miss Edith Emily Swan. The Swan household consists of Edith herself, who lives with her parents. Her two brothers also reside within the household, and the family are considered highly respectable, and Edith takes in washing to support herself. Neighbours to the Swans, the Goodings household is more rambunctious. Rose and her husband William married in 1913 and are known for their loud quarrels. Two children and Rose's sister, with her three children, also live in the dwelling together. It all starts with two anonymous letters arriving at Miss Swan's letterbox, warning her to watch herself and stay out of her neighbour Rose Gooding's business. Police are called in. Edith explains that she and Rose had been on good terms until Edith had been forced to report Rose to the department against the cruelty to children. There were also arguments regarding a shared garden between the two and regarding noise between Rose and her husband for loud arguing. This is just the start of the poison pen letters. A regular flow of letters hits the town, not only to Miss Emily Swan herself, but also the customers of Miss Swan and to Miss Swan's brother's employer, warning him that her brother is stealing. From the Bognor Regis Observer, the 29th of September 1920, alleged criminal libel, Littlehampton case. At a sitting of the Littlehampton County Bench on Wednesday, before Mr. W. Rawson Shaw in the chair, Mr. W. Harwood and Mr. Hemming Johnson, Rose Gooding of Western Road, Littlehampton, was summoned for criminally libelling Edith Emily Swan of Western Road, Littlehampton, and Mr. A. Shelley prosecuted, and a Mr. J. Flowers, instructed by Mr. E. B. One-Up, was for the defendant. Edith Emily Swan, 27, Western Road, Littlehampton, said she received the postcard produced bearing the postmark 2nd of July. The statement on the card was untrue. She knew the defendant as a neighbour quite well. She was on friendly terms with her and her family until witness had occasion to report her to the inspector for cruelty to children for ill-treating her sister's baby. This was about the 3rd or 4th of May last. She received a letter produced dating the 14th of May, signed R, sent by post, unpaid. It contained the words, "Mind your own business and there will be no rows." The day before she received the letter, she was in the wash house at her home, and she overheard Mrs. Gooding say to a Miss Morgan, "Don't speak to Mrs. and Miss Swan," and used bad language in reference to herself. The Tuesday after, she was again in the wash house, and she overheard Mrs. Gooding tell her little daughter Dorothy she was not to come out and speak to her, and used more bad language. She had received the cards produced at various times. She also had a letter put under the door in which was the statement, "You have not got me yet, and I know I am watched at the post office, but there are more ways than one, and this is one." This was signed R.G. On July 5th, she consulted Mr. Shelley. On July the 31st, she received another letter in which was the remark, "You don't frighten me with your solicitor's letter." She had received many letters through the post, unstamped, and she refused to take them in. They were in the same handwriting. She had not received any letters since she attended the court 10 days previously. Cross-examined, she reported Mrs. Gooding for cruelly beating the child. She ill-treated the child at Easter and again on the day she reported it. She did not know that the inspector found the child perfectly all right. Up to this time, the two families had been on perfectly good terms. The only reason she could suggest for the letter was her complaint to the inspector. So far as she knew, she had not an enemy. She had not written any of the letters herself. The first reason why she suspected Mrs. Gooding was because of the conversation she overheard her say to Miss Morgan on May the 13th. Thomas Dalton, supervisor at the post office, produced a letter addressed to Miss E. Swan, dated August 29th. Mr. Shelley's postcard. Mr. Shelley, giving evidence, said that on July 5th he wrote to the accused in respect to obscene and abusive postcards, and he received no reply. On July the 25th he received a postcard saying, "If Miss Swan would mind her own business, there would be no need to come to you." The card also contained abusive language. He had also received a letter signed A. Morgan, which said, "Mrs. Gooding wrote all those filthy postcards to Mrs. Swan," and he contended that the accused wrote this letter also. Alice Morgan, 39 New Road, said the letter produced, signed A. Morgan, was not in her handwriting, and she knew nothing whatever about it. She was at the Goodings' house on the previous Tuesday and spoke about the case. Mrs. Gooding said, "I've had a paper saying I've got to go to court, and you'll have to go with me." She remembered the interview in the wash house, but Miss Swan's name was not mentioned. More letters. Reginald Edgar Booker, sanitary inspector to the Littlehampton Urban District Council, said he received the letter produced, signed Mrs. Gooding, making a complaint as to some fowls and rabbits. On August the 27th, he visited the house and the nuisance was remedied. In the afternoon, he received a letter of abuse signed R.G. He considered these letters were written by the same person. Charles Ernest Hazlitt, photographer, stated that the letter produced was received by himself and his partner, stating that Miss Swan was a woman of bad character and that they would not send their washing to her if they knew her character. This was signed R. Gooding. Kate Leggett, Weston Road, said she had sent washing to Miss Swan's house. She had received a letter abusing herself and referring to Miss Swan. On Mr. Flowers' advice, the defendant reserved her defence, saying, "I am not guilty of such a crime, and I reserve my defence." The accused was committed for trial at the next assizes, bail being allowed in the sum of £50, and two sureties of £50 each. With the flood of witnesses stating they had received letters with bad language by an R. Gooding, things looked bleak for Rose. At a trial in December 1920, Rose is sentenced to 14 days imprisonment, but upon her release, a new torrent of poison pen letters with highly colourful language is directed towards Miss Swan and anyone associated with Miss Swan. A second trial ensues in March 1921, and Rose, continuously protesting her innocence, is once again found guilty, but this time she's sentenced to 12 months hard labour. Rose's request for a reprieve in April 1921 is dismissed out of hand. Whilst Rose is in prison, the torrent of vile letters stop, and the little town of Littlehampton can fall back into its usual slumber. However, whilst Rose is incarcerated, a notebook is discovered, filled with obscenities, and on the same handwriting as the letters that had all been posted to Scotland Yard. Such as the mystery and distress that the poison pen letters are causing in Littlehampton, that Scotland Yard are called in to solve the crime. Scotland Yard sends one of their best detectives, Detective Inspector George Nichols, and upon investigating the notebook and the handwriting of letters from Miss Edith Swan, Detective Inspector Nichols suspects that the real culprit is highly respectable Miss Edith Emily Swan herself, who has been writing the letters to frame Rose. Through extensive efforts by Scotland Yard, Rose's second conviction is quashed, and she is freed from prison. And in addition, the court awards her £250 in compensation for being wrongly accused. For our listeners, this is worth approximately £15,000 in 2024. From the Hull Daily Mail, the 26th of July, 1921. Innocent but twice imprisoned. Women's cruel ordeal. A remarkable instance of a miscarriage of justice came to light in the Court of Criminal Appeal on Monday, when the Lord Chief Justice Sir A.T. Lawrence and Justice Sankey and Branson ordered the immediate release of Mrs. Rose Emma Gooding of Weston Road, Littlehampton. Mrs. Gooding was tried on two occasions at the Lewes Assizes for alleged libel and received sentences of 14 days and 12 months imprisonment. Mr. Travers Humphreys, appearing for the Crown, said the Home Secretary had referred the case to the court. Mrs. Gooding had received two perfectly fair trials and had, in fact, unsuccessfully appealed against one conviction to that court. Since then, however, the police had made inquiries, and Inspector Nichols, Scotland Yard, had ascertained that Mrs. Gooding was innocent of the allegations made against her, for it was impossible that she could have committed the offences for which she had been convicted and sentenced. In the circumstances, of course, he would not support the convictions. The Lord Chief Justice said the convictions would be quashed and Mrs. Gooding at once released. However, Upon Rose's triumphant release with monetary compensation, the letters restart again with a vengeance, swamping the little village with poison pen allegations, lewd comments, and libelous sentiments. It is shortly thereafter that Miss Swan is seen to be posting a letter through the letterbox of a neighbour, Mrs. Violent Lily May, the wife of a local constable. The letter is another poison pen letter in the same handwriting. With this evidence, Miss Edith Emily Swan herself faces trial for libel. The trial takes place in October of 1921. However, she is acquitted by the jury in December of 1921, as no one could believe that such a fine, upstanding citizen as Miss Swan could possibly be the initiator of such sordid language missives. From the Sunday Mirror, the 23rd of October, 1921, the accuser accused. The prosecution of a woman who was innocent arrested. CID libel charge. There was a sensational sequel at Littlehampton Police Court yesterday to the release of Mrs. Rose Emma Gooding after she had served 5 months in prison for criminal libel of which she was proved innocent. Her accuser, Miss Edith Emily Swan, was remanded on bail of £20 until tomorrow on a charge brought by Scotland Yard of writing and publishing a false, scandalous and defamatory libel concerning Mrs. Violet Lily May, wife of a local policeman who lives next door to Mrs. Gooding. Arrest was proved by Inspector Thomas, who stated that when with Detective Inspector Nichols of the CID, he visited Miss Swan and cautioned her. She replied, "All I can say is it is untrue." To the magistrate, Miss Swan said, "I am quite innocent. I would rather fight the case." This dramatic development of Mrs. Gooding's ordeal in jail has created great excitement in Littlehampton. She was twice sentenced for libelling Miss Swan before her innocence was established at the Central Criminal Court, where the police stated that they were satisfied she could not have written letters and postcards which led to the prosecution by Miss Swan. Subsequently, payment of compensation was made to Mrs. Gooding by the Home Office. Miss Swan is found not guilty in court despite the evidence of being seen to post the offending letter to Mrs. May. The jury simply cannot believe that a woman of Miss Swan's character and family could write in such language. Although Miss Swan manages to win over the jury who acquit her, Scotland Yard do not give up. With the return of both Miss Swan and Rose Gooding to the village, the letters start up again, more abundant and more shocking in context than before. Scotland Yard, sure that they have gotten it right with Miss Swan, in tandem with the National Post Office, set up an elaborate sting operation in which stamps marked with invisible ink are sold only to Miss Swan. The sting operation works. Edith Emily Swan is caught as she purchases the secretly marked stamps set aside only for her and two letters of a vile nature addressed to herself and to the local sanitary officer with the special stamps are seen to be placed by her into the empty letterbox. Miss Edith Emily Swan is caught red-handed. Rose had never sent any of the letters. It had always been Edith sending letters to herself, family, friends, neighbours and residents. From the Bognor Regis Observer, the 18th of July, 1923, Littlehampton libelous letter case, Miss Swan committed for trial. At the Arundel Bench on Wednesday last, Miss Edith Emily Swan of 47 Western Road, Littlehampton, was charged on two main counts. The charges. One, that on June the 24th last, she sent or attempted to send a postal package which had thereupon words of an indecent, obscene, and gravely offensive character. And two, that on the same date and at the same time, she did publish a defamatory libel on one Charles Thomas Gardiner, sanitary inspector in Littlehampton. Case for the prosecution. It is alleged that at 5:29 p.m. on Sunday, June the 24th, Miss Swan was seen in the act of posting an indecent letter enclosed in an envelope addressed to the sanitary inspector in Littlehampton. The evidence would be direct, as there were three witnesses who would swear to the facts, and the case against the defendant was strengthened by the stamp on the envelope being traced to her. The sequence of events. On June the 23rd, Miss Swan, who lives in the neighbourhood of the Beach Post Office, entered the office and purchased some 9p National Health Insurance stamps and two halfpenny stamps. The latter were served to her by Mrs. Baker from a small stock of six, especially marked with invisible ink and kept in a separate drawer, according to instructions she had received from an officer of the General Post Office. They were all marked in the same way, the letters being printed upon them in invisible ink, which could be afterwards developed. A watch was kept upon the post office all the next day, and at 5:29 p.m. the defendant was seen to approach the post office by two officials from the General Post Office headquarters, drop something in the letterbox, and go away again in the direction of her home. Inside the post office, Mr. Baker, the postmaster, was in a position to see who approached the letterbox and any article that was dropped in. A photograph would be handed in showing the method of detection. At the bottom of the letterbox was a tray by which the letters could be extracted. Mr. Baker saw Miss Swan approach the box, saw two letters dropped in, and immediately extracted them. The tray was previously empty. The envelopes were addressed, one to a Miss Swan in Surrey, and the others to the sanitary inspector, town office, local, written in pencil. One of the officials who had been outside then entered the post office, saw the two letters in Mr. Baker's hands, and by authority in his possession, opened the letter addressed to the sanitary inspector. After reading a few words, he went out, and with the other official followed Miss Swan to a cottage she had entered near her home. After 20 minutes' delay, as Miss Swan did not come out, they followed her in, and she was asked to accompany them to the post office, which she did. After a warning, Mr. Bowler asked Miss Swan to watch him while he developed the stamp. The marks came out clearly, and Miss Swan was asked if she had any explanation. She said no, except that she was not guilty of sending any letters to the sanitary inspector. Asked how she disposed of the two stamps, she acknowledged to have bought the previous day. She said one was on the letter addressed to her sister, which was sent on to her in the ordinary way, and the envelope voluntarily returned, produced, and the other a letter to another sister, a Mrs. Tomsett, also in Surrey, which she posted between 10 and 11 that day. Explanation untrue. This explanation, he said, was untrue, as it would be established that no such letter was posted at that office that day, nor had one been delivered to Mrs. Tomett. The defendant had been caught red-handed, as it was. It was difficult to conceive how the case against her could be stronger. The post office had been instrumental, he thought, in at least bringing to an end the scandalous dissemination of libelous and obscene letters to public men and other prominent people in Littlehampton and district for a period of over 2.5 years. He had submitted to the bench that there was no question but that the accused must be sent for trial. The evidence. Mrs. Elsie Baker, residing at the Beach Post Office and wife of Edwin Baker, the sub-postmaster, was the first witness. In reply to Mr. Pierce, she said that at 4:30 p.m. on June the 23rd, she was supplied by Mr. Bowler of the General Post Office with 6 stamps for a special purpose. They were for sale, but under special instructions from Mr. Bowler. The stamps were attached together, untorn, and she put them in a special drawer in a special compartment, separate from the other. Miss Swan came in and bought 13 ninepenny insurance stamps and 2 1.5-penny stamps. The 1.5-penny stamps were supplied from the special stock of 6, which I took from the separate drawer where they had been placed. I tore off 2 of the 6 and handed them to her, and the other 4 were afterwards returned to the post office official. The marked stamps were kept separate and labelled. The next witness was Walter E. Bowler, an official of the General Post Office. In reply to Mr. Pierce, he confirmed the evidence of the last witness with reference to handing her the marked stamps on June the 23rd and withdrawing the others. The new stamps were, in his case, printed with the letters WEB over S, representing his own initials, and S, the first letter of the surname of the person to whom they were to be sold. At about 5:20 p.m., he was watching from outside in company with Mr. Cartwright, another official, and he saw the accused approach the post office from the direction of her home, go to the letterbox, drop in something white, and return towards her home again. There was no other person anywhere near the post office at that moment. Witness saw Mr. Baker and 2 letters in his hand, which he handed to him. Both were sealed and had 1.5-penny stamps attached. One envelope was then handed to witness Exhibit A, addressed to Miss Swan in Surrey, and he identified it as 1 of the 2. Another, Exhibit 2, addressed to the sanitary inspector, he addressed as the other. The letter addressed to the sanitary inspector he opened on authority received from him to do so. He shouted to Mr. Cartwright outside to stop the defendant and saw him run after her, and he, witness, followed hard after him. He saw her go up Western Road, enter a gate, and go into a cottage, which was not her home. After about 2 minutes, she came to the door, looked at them, and went in again. He followed her into the kitchen and said, "Miss Swan, I believe." She replied, "Yes." I knew her very well by sight before this. I then said to her, "I am an officer of the post office, and I want to speak to you about 2 letters you have just posted. Will you come back to the post office with me?" She assented, and we returned together. Arriving at the post office, I cautioned her, and she said that she understood the meaning of the caution. I put the 2 letters on the counter and said, "Just stand up, Miss Swan, and watch this." She did so, and I developed the marks on the stamps. The printed letters became visible, and I asked her to read them out aloud. This she did, W-E-B, and then S. I said, I have just seen you post these letters, one of which is addressed to the sanitary inspector, which I have opened and find that it contains obscene and defamatory words. What is your explanation of the matter? No explanation, she replied. I will give you no explanation other than I am not guilty of writing or posting any letter to the sanitary inspector. I said, the postage stamps on each of the letters just posted bear my private mark and the first letter of your surname. They were purchased by you at 7:30 p.m. yesterday at this office. Have you anything to say? She replied, no. I asked her what she had done with the two stamps she had bought, and she said, there is one on that letter to my sister, and the other is on a letter to another sister, Mrs. Tomsett of Cranley, which I posted at this office between 2 and 3 this morning. Witness said he made no comment on this, and the defendant left the post office shortly afterwards. Witness said that on the next day, June the 25th, he personally handed the letter addressed to the sanitary inspector to him. After some further corroborating evidence, the clerk, Mr. Holmes, read out the summons to the defendant and asked her if she had anything to say. After consultation with her solicitor, she said, I desire to call no evidence at present. I am not guilty of these crimes, and I reserve my defence. The bench consulted and announced that the defendant would be committed for trial at the next assizes on all charges. Bail was applied for and granted at £25, with two additional sureties of £25 each. Her father confirmed he would pay the bail of £25, but Edith pales when she realizes that it was possible no one would cover the other two sureties of her case. From the Bognor Regis Observer, the 18th of July, 1923, Littlehampton libelous letter case, Miss Swan committed for trial. The scene in court. The court was uncomfortably crowded for such a hot day, and the atmosphere was very oppressive. A considerable number of women came from Littlehampton by motor bus. The defendant came with her father, an oldish man who looked very anxious as the case against his daughter was gradually revealed by the prosecution. The defendant looked cool and collected as she smartly entered the box, clad in a light blue dress with a white straw hat and wearing spectacles. As the proceedings were likely to be protracted, she was allowed to sit during the hearing. She maintained her self-possession throughout, but evidently felt the strain in the end. She visibly paled and looked anxiously around after being committed and or realizing that the bail to release her might not be forthcoming. With the damning evidence, the jury have no choice but to find Miss Swan guilty, regardless of her pristine reputation. From the Daily Mirror, the 20th of July, 1923, 12 months for Miss Swan. End of libel by post-drama at Littlehampton. Judge's comment, hard to believe she is in her right mind. Found guilty of maliciously publishing a defamatory libel concerning the Littlehampton sanitary inspector and also for sending an indecent article through the post. Miss Edith Emily Swan, 32, was sentenced to 12 months imprisonment at Lewes Assizes yesterday. This marks another step in the mystery of the libelous letters which have troubled Littlehampton for 2 years. Mr. Justice Avery, addressing the prisoner after the verdict, said it was difficult to believe that she could have been in her right mind. My lord, I am a perfectly innocent woman, said the prisoner when she was heard the sentence. I can only act upon the verdict of the jury, replied the judge. Prisoner's denials. Sanitary inspector makes complaint about ashes in garden. When the court adjourned on Wednesday evening, the case for the prosecution had been completed, evidence having been given of the sale of the two postage stamps specially marked in invisible ink to the prisoner. Evidence was also given of the posting of two letters by prisoner, one addressed to herself and the other addressed in pencil to the local sanitary inspector, containing the words which formed the subject of the second charge. The stamps of each of the envelopes, when developed, disclosed the marking made by a GPO official. The defendant went into the witness box yesterday and said she purchased some insurance stamps and 2 3 halfpenny stamps at the Beach post office from Mrs. Baker. Later in the evening, she wrote a letter at her father's dictation to her sister, Mrs. Tomsett, at Cranley in Surrey. After she had written it and her father had read it, she sealed and stamped it, posting it the next morning at the Beach post office. At about 4:30 the same afternoon, she wrote another letter to her unmarried sister at the Cedars near Woking, putting the second stamp on it, and posted it at the same place about 5:30. Mr. Justice Avery, holding up the envelopes addressed to the sanitary inspectors, directs his questions to Miss Swan. Is this in your handwriting? Miss Swan responds emphatically, no, sir. Miss Swan stated that she had since written to her sister, Mrs. Tomsett, asking if she had received the letter she posted on the Sunday morning, and she replied that she had not. Edward Swan, a grey-bearded, elderly man, said he had never heard his daughter use any bad language, and on the Saturday evening his daughter wrote a letter to her sister, Mrs. Tomsett, which he saw her stamp. The judge, summing up, said that before the jury could possibly return a verdict against the defendant, they must be satisfied that she posted the letters to the sanitary inspector and that at the time she knew its contents. Addressing the prisoner after the jury had returned their verdict, the jury said it was difficult to believe that she could be in her right mind. He had to act upon the verdict of the jury and, having regard to the history of the case, he must pass the severe sentence of 12 months imprisonment. As expected, Edith's defence team puts in an appeal, which is quickly dismissed. From the Reynolds newspaper, the 19th of August, 1923, the Littlehampton libels. Miss Swan refused leave to appeal. The Court of Criminal Appeal, after hearing the application of Edith Emily Swan, the Littlehampton laundress, for leave to appeal against her conviction for sending libelous letters through the post, declined to interfere. Miss Swan was sentenced to 12 months' imprisonment at the last Lewes Assizes for publishing a defamatory libel concerning Charles Thomas Gardner, a Littlehampton sanitary inspector. The case for the prosecution was that Miss Swan had been caught in the act of posting two letters which bore specially prepared stamps sold to her at the Beach post office. At the trial, she pleaded not guilty and denied that she had ever written a letter to Mr. Gardner. This was a climax to a campaign of scurrilous letters which had been going on at Littlehampton for a long time. One of the incidents in it was the arrest and conviction of an innocent woman, Mrs. Gooding. She was released by order of the Home Office and granted compensation. The Lord Chief Justice, in refusing Miss Swan's application, said the court could see no reason to interfere with the jury's decision. Postscript. A census taken in 1939 shows Mrs. Gooding still living in Littlehampton with her husband William. The Justice Avery's comment questioning whether Edith was in her right mind came eerily to pass. The 1939 census finds Edith living at an institution in Worthing described as an incapacitated patient. She died at the age of 68 in Worthing. That concludes this episode of Wicked Wednesdays, the Littlehampton Poison Pen Letter Mystery. We very much hope you enjoyed the show. If you did enjoy this show, we would be grateful if you could like or subscribe to our channel. We upload 5 days a week. Mondays are murderous as we delve into the dark side of Regency and Victorian crime. Wednesdays are wicked, where we pull together stories with a similar theme, such as Doctors of Death. Fridays are frightful, where we look at crimes in a location, such as stories from the stage to murder and scandal in the aristocracy. Saturdays is Serial Killer Saturdays, where we investigate serial killer stories from the past. And Sundays is a bit of fun, with a unique mini-murder mystery where you, the listener, have a chance to solve a murderous riddle. On the last Sunday of the month, we offer a 2-hour compilation of stories based around a theme. If you like this channel, you may be interested in our sister channel, Chronicle of the Times, where we offer a lighter side of Victorian and Edwardian news stories, as well as a weekly podcast of stories from authors of the day, such as Dickens, Collins, Benson, and Conan Doyle. Thank you again for watching and listening. This has been News of the Times, and I am Robin Coles.